This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about harissa.
Yes. Ooh, cravings.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Actually, A, yes, cravings. B, to specify, we're talking about the condiment today, not the porridge, which is a whole separate episode. Mm-hmm. C, I say cravings, but this is actually something that I'm not sure I have experience with.
Oh.
I feel like I have to. I feel like I had to have had it in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure.
You're not sure. Hmm. Well, it was funny when you suggested it because I have had a craving for harissa recently.
Yeah.
I've just been on a big, like, I've wanted like a good gyro and hummus. And hummus often has like a swirl of harissa in
it. Okay, then I've probably had it, but sometimes I avoid the swirly ones because I'm afraid that it's sweet peppers, not spicy peppers.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. That's fair. But a lot of Middle Eastern restaurants have harissa hummus.
All right, I must have had it.
Well, we can investigate.
We can, we can. I can rectify this either way.
Yes, yeah. It's already on my list. It's already on my list. Oh, my gosh. You can see past episodes on other hot sauces we've done, peppers and chilies that we've done, sriracha.
Okay, which, sure, yeah.
By the way, there is still a shortage of sriracha, and I could not find some the other day, and I was
very
upset.
That is very upsetting.
It is. Yeah. Za'atar came up in a lot of the research I was doing, and we've done an episode on that, so.
Yeah. Maybe paprika as well, while we're talking about dried peppers.
Yeah. But I guess this brings us to our question.
I guess it does.
Harissa. What is it?
Well, harissa is a type of all-purpose condiment made variably thick and variably smooth with a base of seasoned, dried, and or roasted chili paste. Recipes vary and involve lots of personal preferences and flair, but the seasonings are often salt and garlic plus warm, bright spices like coriander and caraway blended together with something acidic and then some olive oil to round out the flavor and the texture. So the result is going to be a paste or sauce that's rich red in color and anywhere from fairly mild to like really hot. And it can be used as a finish for dishes, served tableside as a dip or spread or dressing, is sometimes mixed with yogurt or other stuff like that, and is also incorporated into just all kinds of savory recipes like marinades and stews. It's roasty and spicy, bright and hot, a little bit fruity and sort of bittersweet. It's just like a really good balanced chili paste condiment, both comforting and exciting. It's warm on warm, like a hug in the sun.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? I don't necessarily like hugs. I don't necessarily like the sun, but but that just sounds very good.
It does.
All right. Traditionally, harissa is made with ripe red hot chili peppers that are sun-dried and then reconstituted when it comes time to make the mix. Sometimes smoked peppers are used, too, to get a little bit of that smoky flavor in there. But you can use fresh or fresh roasted peppers and of whatever heat level you like. Leaving out the seeds can also mitigate that heat level. And I have read opinions about whether it's appropriate to have seeds in harissa at all. I have. Mm-hmm. You do you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The seasonings. Right. Definitely garlic, usually roasted, and some salt. Coriander and caraway, often cumin. Powdered dried pepper like paprika or cayenne might boost your flavor and color. Some recipes incorporate florals like rose petals or rose water, or herbs like mint, which sounds so good. Heck. Mm-hmm. that acid, you're not looking in harissa for as much acid as we put in like vinegar-based hot sauces, but a little bit of lemon juice or vinegar will help balance out the sauce. Some recipes also use tomato paste. And because you want to get the most out of the ingredients, you're often going to toast the peppers, the garlic, and the spices, and then blend it into a paste with the acid and enough olive oil to bind it together. This is often done with either a simple mortar and pestle or with a meat grinder. Oh. I saw a meat grinder in a lot of places as like the recommendation for getting the appropriate texture.
Okay.
Yeah. And that final texture can be anywhere from thick and firm to sort of salsa-like and spoonable, chunky to smooth. And when you're jarring it, you pour a little bit of extra oil on top to help preserve it in the fridge, just kind of like lock in all the flavor. Yeah. All kinds of varieties exist beyond this, though. You might add like lemon peel or preserved lemon, or herbs like oregano or fennel or saffron.
I had a friend make a dish that involved harissa for me recently, and the preserved lemon. She was telling me all about like how key it was, but only a tiny, tiny bit.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because it all packs right. so much flavor.
It does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I had some preserved lemon on like a cheese plate situation that a friend made for me recently. And I was like, I always forget. And every time I have preserved lemon, I'm like, I need to. Why do I not eat this every day? It makes me so happy.
It's so good. Yes.
Oh, anyway, harissa is fairly easy to make at home, but is also sold jarred in stores. And these days it's available as like a powdered spice blend flavor. And generally, just as a flavor for prepackaged products, it shows up in snacks like spiced nuts or beef jerky or olives, in drinks like juice cocktails, and in frozen appetizers, stuff like that.
Wow.
And yeah, y'all, I got so hungry looking at recipes that incorporate it. You know, like it's great for tossing with vegetables before you roast or grill them, or as a component of like a meat marinade. You can use it to layer flavor into a grain dish like couscous or some kind of pilaf, or any kind of soup or stew or sauce or braising liquid. You can sub it in for ketchup in a meatloaf. I mean, just put it on everything on the table. I don't know. Mix it up with some more olive oil and lemon juice, or with yogurt to make a good dressing or a dip. Harissa ranch. I don't know. Spread it on bread with goat cheese. Why have I never put this in a pasta sauce before?
I don't know. I don't know, Lauren.
Harissa in like a mezcal cocktail?
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, so many options. So many things to explore. Mm-hmm. But what about the nutrition?
it packs a lot of flavor for a relatively low caloric punch. That does depend on how much olive oil you're using in there. But yeah, good spread of micronutrients. Drink some water. Eat a protein. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say drink responsibly, which I guess, yeah.
Yeah, drink your harissa responsibly.
Drink it responsibly. I did read a pretty funny, it was a really anecdotal article about harissa. And there was one woman who makes it, and she was joking about, like, you know, don't put too much in it because it's going to overpower every flavor. It's like a beautiful thing that you don't need it to take center stage, but also it might be hotter than you think it is. So. Be careful.
Yeah, that was involved in the recommendations for pairing it with yogurt to kind of tone it down. Just a little, just a touch, just depending on what you're going for.
Exactly. Yes. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
We do. Okay, so according to Google Trends, global interest in harissa has been spiking every January since 2013. Which I read posited on Serious Eats that this is like part of like a January health food clean eating kind of trend. Like, how do I get more flavor into my food without making it like too heavy?
Huh. That's interesting. I ran across that as well. And we are going to talk about it a bit in the history section. But I guess that's never been my association. But there is the whole Mediterranean diet
concept.
Thing.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. McCormick brand, perhaps unsurprisingly, has been keeping an eye on this, and they report pretty huge growth of harissa as like a flavor and or ingredient on menus and in products internationally. Like, as of 2014, they reported only 10 like internationally available products mentioned harissa in their descriptions, but between 2014 and 2019, 231 products were introduced into that category. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They also further reported that as of 2019, harissa was mentioned on social media 28 times an hour on average.
Wow. They know everything about us, Lauren.
They do.
They do. I will say, I was doing a brief, like, where can I get harissa near me search. And I wasn't aware that you could get like a flavoring powder thing, but that was a lot of what came up.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tunisia is the largest exporter.
Oh, yeah. As of 2007, they were exporting some 5,000 tons a year to more than 20 countries. And that was before the kind of big boom in interest for it hit. At the time, they were producing a total of over 22,000 tons a year. As of 2006, the amount of peppers that Tunisia was producing for all purposes, including harissa, was about 256,000 tons.
Whew.
Yeah. Mm. Harissa is the country's second most important canned food export, like monetarily and in volume. Although I didn't see, no one told me what was first. I'm guessing maybe like olive oil. Does that count as a canned product?
Oh no. These are the thoughts that I lie awake at night. I already have enough trouble sleeping.
We gotta
move on.
Okay. All right. In Tunisia, harissa is often eaten at least twice a day. And the UN estimates that the production of it employs around 25,000 people across the country.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we do have some history for you.
We certainly do. And we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Meet Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so archaeological evidence suggests that chilies have been eaten in what is now Mexico for thousands of years. And we have talked about this in previous episodes, but just kind of a brief refresher.
Yeah, that is where they are from.
Exactly. The Aztecs, Mayans, and the Incas cultivated them and used them in all kinds of things. When Columbus, you know, that guy, and others like him arrived in the Americas, they took these chilies with them and spread them all across the globe, chilies and, quote, peppers, because it was kind of that spice
right.
that they associated with black pepper. Mm-hmm. So that also adds to some confusion here. But they ended up in all kinds of dishes because of this, many that we've talked about on this show, like chilies spread far and wide, and they ended up in all kinds of things. They were in Asia, Europe, Africa, and the Middle East by the 16 to 1700s. And I couldn't get to the bottom of this, or I couldn't find very concrete evidence, I guess.
Like a really authoritative source, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But a couple of sources I found, and I did run into this when I was researching this topic, suggest that by the 7th century CE, the word harissa wasn't used to refer to a wheat porridge with meat and spices, and that it got that name because harissa meant to pound or to squash, here referring to the pounded wheat. But some speculate that when it comes to the sauce, it did come from that, but it's referencing the pounding of the chilies.
Yeah, yeah, that was, I ran across a lot of kind of anecdotal or like related etymology to that end. And right, that porridge, which is a sort of creamy grain and meat dish. It actually reminded me a lot of the polenta that we were just talking about recently. But yeah, it's a porridge dish that's cooked low and slow for hours and is not what we're talking about today.
No, but I did have to clarify with you because I had not heard of this. And I was like, oh, wait.
Oh, hold on. Yep.
Which harissa are we talking about here? Now, where exactly harissa the sauce originated from and what exactly it was made of in its early days are matters of debate. I'm sure that's no surprise. However, most seem to agree that it probably originated in North Africa and especially perhaps Tunisia, where they have been growing these peppers since they were introduced there hundreds of years ago. Records suggest that these peppers that were, yes, most likely red peppers, were first imported to Tunisia from Spain in the 16th century. People fairly quickly started to adapt them, add them into their cuisine. And by the 17th century, at least, possibly earlier, folks were drying them in the sun, grinding them up with spices and perhaps other things, and then making a paste out of it and adding that paste to protein dishes, to couscous dishes, other grain dishes, or even just spreading it on bread. Which sounds really good to me. The resulting paste was so popular that it prompted the spread of the cultivation of these peppers into nearby areas. And this pushed up the production in places it was already grown. So people were excited about it, started growing more, started to spread. Yes. A couple of things I found also linked Jewish and Muslim people expelled from Spain in the 16th century that settled in Tunisia to the growth of these peppers and the making of the paste. It's kind of confusing in the way that globalization is very confusing.
Oh, yeah.
But the theory here is that they were perhaps trying to recreate something that they had in Spain, which may have been introduced to Spain via Arab traders.
Okay. All right. Yeah, sure, sure.
Uh-huh. And according to this story, at least, the paste was pretty easily adopted into all kinds of traditions and cuisines in the area because it met many conditions and taste of the peoples in the region. This particular article was describing a festival there that celebrates harissa and its history. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. If listeners know more about that, oh my gosh, please write it.
Oh, yeah.
At some point in here, people started using harissa as a, say it with me,
aphrodisiac.
Yes. I really, like, I saw that mentioned in a lot of articles. I couldn't, again, find great concrete evidence of it, but I'll put it in here because...
Yeah. I feel like humans, you know, that's what we get up to. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they're like, hey, sure, let's try this.
Yep. Meanwhile, the other ingredients that go into harissa, you know, olives for the oil, those spices, had been growing in the region since way back. Traditionally, harissa is made usually by women in the families or the neighborhoods of the farmers who grow the peppers. And this sounds like a party. Like, this sounds like a really fun community event. Again, if you have personal experience or familial experience, please write in. However, the rise of industrialization and also dictatorships in North Africa during the late 20th century led to mass farming and centralized manufacturing of harissa, often with poor working conditions. But since the revolutions of the Arab Spring in the early 20-teens, co-ops have started popping up to improve the lives and the livelihoods of small landowners and farm workers and harissa producers. In 2014, Tunisia created their own, like, controlled origin label for food products like this. It's sort of like a gold and red sunburst design that'll say food quality label Tunisia. And this is to guarantee, like, product specifications and local production. This was in collaboration with the UN Industrial Development Organization, which has also been helping get harissa out into the international market and has been supporting some of those local co-ops. There's one that I kept running into called Arim, which is an all-women organization that, as of 2022, included 164 women who were producing over 400 pounds of harissa per day in their workshops.
In 2015, Time magazine listed harissa on its list of 50 new healthiest foods of all time. Yes. So, yeah, 50 new healthiest foods of all time, which kind of cracked me up. But I guess also goes back to what you were mentioning earlier, Lauren, with the January resurgence of popularity of harissa.
Right. Huh. And also, like, new is hilarious when it comes to something that's been made for hundreds of years, but cool.
Yeah. Always be careful with that kind of language is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, harissa was added to UNESCO's list of intangible cultural heritage, specifically in regards to Tunisia.
Yeah. Tunisia had sort of applied for this, and there was apparently no argument. Like, UNESCO was like, yep. Application approved. This is a daily and integral part of cuisine and of social cohesion. That's a direct quote, and I sort of love it. Social cohesion.
Yeah, I love that too. Harissa has gained a larger, more global audience in recent years, in part because of increasingly, and I'm putting quotes around this, adventurous taste. with more availability, with growing affinity for spicy foods, which we talked about in a recent-ish episode, and with the help of popular celebrity chefs using harissa in their recipes. I do think, you know, as always, it's worth remembering the point of view of who's writing these articles.
And for whom, right?
Exactly, because as you said, it's not new, it has been popular for a long time. But I do think for people, a lot of people who didn't grow up with it, who for it is, quote, new for them.
Sure.
I think that people are getting more of a taste for it. And hopefully, because I know we've talked about the negative effects that can come out of that. But hopefully, sure. we can do it in a more responsible way.
Hopefully. Yeah. I think fortunately, like, peppers are easier to grow. Like, that is a more prolific crop than like quinoa or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's more intensive and specialized. So,
right.
So hopefully we're not going to wreck anyone's life by liking harissa.
I hope so.
Yeah. And also, right. Like, I love that chili peppers are adventurous.
Right.
Some phrasings. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, they can be. I mean, like if you find that adventurous, then I'm not negging you at all. Like, I mean, like, that's fine. Like, we all have what we're used to and, you know, mm-hmm. what we try.
Yeah. I think it was, like, I just saw that in a bunch of places, and also a bunch of places bought out Jamie Oliver using harissa that made me, like, kind of made me laugh.
Okay.
But I think it's, like, that kind of food, you know, Food Network on television. Yeah. People are seeing more globalized cuisine that a lot of times gets labeled as adventurous when it's sure. just something they haven't had before, which again can be, but
yeah so. I'm not gonna tell you how to have an adventure. That's up to you. Yeah. Right. And like, right, and through the internet and all of that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. where, you know, you might have more exposure through recipe blogs or whatever it is that it is. So
yes,
it's mentioned on social media. What is that, 28 times an hour? Yeah.
McCormick spying on us again.
They're in my head, Annie.
No. No, Laura, no. Oh, well, we'll have to deal with that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, I think that's what we have to say about harissa for now.
I think it is. We would love to hear from you if you have experience or adventures with it. We do have some listener mail for you, though, already prepared.
We do, and we will get into that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit Pronamel.com. Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener Mail. Like a hug.
Oh, like a sunny hug. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam wrote, "Today I was listening to the Blue Muscle episode and heard listener mail referring back to the Bach episode, which made me want to tell you about one wildly popular Texas beer, Shiner Bock. The Spetzel, I could not find a pronunciation, but I'm going with Spetzel, brewery in tiny Shiner, Texas, was hyper-local for decades. Their products were a lager, premium, and a Bock.
In the 1970s, a group of Austin hippies took on the task of popularizing Shiner. They were aided by the ability to undercut national brands on price and college students liking to have cheap beer. One famous picture of the Armadillo World Headquarters Beer Garden from about 1973 shows a sign with prices posted for Schlitz, 40 cents a glass, $1.85 per pitcher, Budweiser, same as Schlitz, Lone Star, 35 cents a glass, $1.65 per pitcher, and Shiner, 30 cents a glass, $1.50 per pitcher.
Oh.
Yeah. The consequence of this was to get an entire generation of Austinites hooked on the local dark brown Bock beer, an affection that's persisted even though Shiner is now a non-bargain boutique beer at $8 to $12 for a six-pack.
Huh.
Yes. I mentioned Shiner in that episode because that's what my friend from Austin was like, you're going to get a pack of Shiner and you're going to wait in line for this barbecue. And I did it. And it was great. But I didn't go too deep into the history. So this is really interesting about how it
absolutely
solidified this reputation.
Right, right. Yeah, I do have a very like that's a beer for fancy people kind of association in my head.
And I thought about, again, we're circling in, hopefully, on playing D&D again soon. And I was looking for a Bock and I thought about getting Shiner Bock, but it's kind of expensive for what I consider not really a kind of independent beer. I guess you could make the argument that it is, but usually when I pay that much, it's not as big
as
Shiner Bock is.
Sure, but it's more local. But no, fascinating. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Also, right, 30 cents a glass. Heck. Ben wrote, I'm just listening to the Bock episode, and you mentioned the tradition with the hot poker. My grandmother apparently used to heat up an iron poker in the fire and then dip it into her Guinness, which she then drank. The theory went that this would cause tiny bits of iron to flake off of the poker and dissolve in the Guinness. Drinking it would then help with iron deficiency. I wonder if this is a tradition that has spread across the world to different beers and people came up with different explanations for it. I believe the tradition with Guinness is relatively well known here in Ireland. Huh.
That's interesting.
Huh.
Oh, that is so fascinating. I hope other listeners write in about this because the idea that you would get tiny bits of iron in your drink to
that
help
are,
with your
that are
iron.
Nutritious. Yeah. Like, this is a good nutritional intake. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This is fascinating. The entire, like, warming up your beer with a hot iron poker is also very fascinating to me because I feel like for most beers, like, coldness is part of why you're drinking it. Though certainly, like, cellar temperature is a thing, but.
Right. Not, like, hotness, though.
But, right, not heat.
Yeah. Room temperature coolness in there.
Yeah, somewhere in that range. Fascinating.
It is. I hope other people have some thoughts about this. Because I would love to. I've never heard of this.
No. I do want to try it, though. I don't want to try it, like, right now because it's already warm in Georgia. But yeah. Next winter.
Yes. Plans. In the meantime, thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you'd like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. And we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.